This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We're going to start with a story about a businessman, a real estate tycoon born and raised in New York with incredible hair and a penchant for making headlines. His name, you already know, is Donald Trump. Years ago, long before the outrageous pronouncements about Muslims and Mexicans and women, Donald Trump's outrageous remarks were generally found in the New York tabloids, which seemed to adore him. Back in those days, Mark Singer, who's a staff writer for The New Yorker, got the assignment to write a profile of Trump for the magazine. And he told the story on stage at an event put together by The Moth. Here's Mark Singer.
So it's 1996, it's the fall, and I've been at The New Yorker since 1974. Worked for a number of editors. At this point, Tina Brown is the editor. And Tina and I have a really good working understanding at this point. I have just spent 4 years, more or less, writing a book that was supposed to take me a year and a half, during which I wasn't available to write many pieces for the magazine. So our understanding is that in Tina's office, in her desk, there is a special drawer, and in that drawer is a special jar, and in that jar are my testicles. And one morning my phone rings, and she says, "Trump, Donald Trump. I've just had breakfast with him at the Plaza. You're going to write a profile of him. You're absolutely going to love him. He's totally full of You'll love him. I've told him he'll love you. You're doing it." So which indicates that I am doing it. So I go out and I go to work, and I spend several months at this. I go places with Trump. I try to understand his way of doing business. Early on, we reach an agreement. I exceed, at least to his assumption, that I am his tool. Now, I have to read everything that's been written about him, and I have to read a lot of books that have his byline on them. A lot of ghost-written books say they were written by Donald Trump, and I read them. And the overarching theme of these books is actually the same theme that emerged later in The Apprentice, which is, we know that you're a complete putz, but you're at least allowed to fantasize about what my life is like. And that is, in fact, what I want to do. I'm trying to understand. It's hard. When you're writing about a well-known person, it's very hard to ask a question that hasn't been previously asked or to get an answer that you haven't previously received. And he says a couple of things that are quite baffling to me. He says, early on, he starts saying to me, "Off the record, but you can use it." If we were on speaking terms today, I would ask him what he meant by that. He says other baffling things. I never understood quite what he meant when he described the kind of real estate that he sold. He described it as existing in three categories: luxury, super luxury, and super, super luxury. So I write the piece. and I have everything but an ending. I really haven't figured it out. And I've spent a lot of time with him. I've traveled with him. I've met his wife. I've met a couple of his kids. And along the way, I really got the question that I was trying to figure out all along, which was, what is Donald Trump's interior life? I'd worked hard to come up with this, and the closest I came was when a security analyst told me, deep down, he wants to be Madonna. So I go with that, and I end the piece by concluding that he does not have an interior life, and I say that he had aspired to and achieved the ultimate luxury, an existence unmolested by the rumbling of a soul. Shockingly, he does not like the piece. He writes a sort of spurned lover's complaint to Tina, in which he said, you know, you told me I would love it. I don't. You lied. Which might strike some people, ironically, as being ironic, considering there was a deputy mayor of New York who once said, I wouldn't believe Donald Trump if his tongue were notarized. I don't hear from him directly. But later, I do get a pretty clear sense of his feelings toward me. He publishes a book called The Art of the Comeback. And in it, he devotes a few pages to both Tina and me. He describes how years earlier, when Tina was editing Vanity Fair, she had assigned a writer who he describes as an unattractive reporter named Marie Brenner to write about him. And he omits from the book what he told me about how he got revenge on Marie, which was at a charity dinner, he poured a bottle of red wine down her dress. And the passage about me begins on page 180. Now, in order to do justice to his prose, I want to read what he wrote. Tina Brown was at it again, asking me to agree to a profile. She's a very persuasive woman. She told me, you will love the piece, you'll absolutely love it. After listening a while, I agreed. I thought, how many editors call someone for breakfast in order to convince him to do a story that they could write without him anyway? The next day, I got a call from a New Yorker reporter, Mark Singer. When he came into the office, I immediately sensed that he was not much of anything. Nondescript, with a faint wise guy sneer and some kind of chip on his shoulder. Singer reminded me a bit of Harry Hurt, a guy who wrote an inaccurate book about me. While Singer was slightly more physically attractive than Harry Hurt, which, by the way, wasn't difficult, Singer had scar written all over him. Now, it occurs to me that this is far and away the most wonderful thing that has happened in my life other than the birth of my children. And I don't hear any more from him, but I've got that going for me. If everything else falls through, I will always have the art of the comeback. Now, fast forward 2005, I publish a book in which this piece about Trump is collected. It's a collection of profiles, and it's reviewed in the Sunday Times book review by a writer named Jeff McGregor, someone I don't know, but based upon this single review, he strikes me as a terrifically perceptive fellow. He has one quibble. He says that that the only time I throw and land a sucker punch is in the piece about Trump, because Trump is too easy a target with neither the wit nor the foot speed to defend himself. Think again, Mr. McGregor. 3 weeks later, the New York Times Book Review publishes a letter from Trump about this review. The New York Times Book Review, you can get it on a Wednesday before the Sunday when people get it at home. And so I happened to see it that Wednesday. I knew the letter was coming. And I decided to check my Amazon numbers for this book on Friday. And the book was 73,149. Now the letter. He's unhappy with both McGregor and me. He says, we belong together. Some people cast shadows, and other people choose to live in those shadows. To each his own. they are entitled to their choices. Most writers want to be successful. Some writers even want to be good writers. I've read John Updike. I've read Orhan Pamuk. I've read Philip Roth. When Mark Singer enters the league, maybe I'll read one of his books, but it will be a long time. He was not born with great writing ability. Then, I've been a best-selling author for close to 20 years. Whether you like it or not, facts are facts. And then he proceeds to quote from Joe Queenan, who many of you might know his work. He works heavily in irony. And he quotes Queenan saying about Trump that he has written, quote, a steady stream of classics with a stylistic seamlessness and voice, an astonishing achievement. And then Donald elaborates. He says, it's a simple thing called talent. I have no doubt the McGregor's and Singer's books will do badly. They just don't have what it takes. Now, actually, within 48 hours, my book is up to 385 on the Amazon list. So I think I've got to thank Trump. Absolutely. My mother taught me always, you know, write a thank you letter. And what can I send him? What is he like? And I realize money. I'm going to send him some money. I decide to send him $1,000. And then it occurs to me, I don't have $1,000. So I came up with another figure, and I wrote him a letter. I said, Dear Donald, thank you so much for that wonderful letter to the New York Times Book Review. Several friends have called or written to say that it's the funniest thing they've read in a long time. As I'm sure you are well aware, it's considered bad form to pay the people who review one's books. Nevertheless, I enclose a check for $37.82, a small token of my gratitude. You're special to me. Also, I enclose two Band-Aids because you seem unable to stop picking at this particular scab. These should come in handy. Cheerfully, Mark. I suspect that that's not going to be the end of it. And sure enough, 10 days later, I get a letter, Trump Organization's envelope. Inside is my letter. He's returned it, and across the bottom, he has written, Mark, you are a total loser. And your book and writings sucks. Best wishes, Donald. P.S. And I hear it is doing very poorly, which is absolutely correct. It's 62,000 something at this point. And then one more thing happens. I get a letter from Citibank, and it's my bank statement. And I open it up, and it seems that my bank account is $37.82 lighter. He has cashed the check.
Mark Singer performing at a Moth storytelling event in 2009. You can find his profile of Donald Trump, a classic in the history of the magazine, in my humble opinion, at newyorkerradio.org.